This podcast was produced on Gadigal land. Before we start, the Royal Botanic Gardens and Domain Trust would like to acknowledge and pay respect to all elders past, present and emerging. This land always was and always will be Aboriginal land. Hello and welcome once again to a very special episode of Branch Out. This week, we're honouring NAIDOC Week. NAIDOC Week is a celebration of the culture and achievements of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples. It's also a time to reflect on history and how we can better respect and support First Nations Australians. This year's theme is Heal Country. So, to celebrate on Branch Out, I sat down virtually with Clarence Lockie. You would probably know him best from Gardening Australia. We discussed his relationship with the land and what Hill Country means to him.
Yeah, my name's Clarence Lockie and I'm a Bundjalung fellow from the far north coast of New South Wales, the beautiful Tweed Valley, Tweed Byron. Not so much bushland around at the moment, but there was lots when I was a lot younger than I am now. The key thing that most people know is that Cape Byron, Arakwal country, is we're talking about the easternmost point of Australia. So we have the easternmost point, but we also have what most people call Mount Warning. We call Wollumbin. It's our sacred mountain. So it's can be seen from all areas of Bundjalung, and it's all beautiful rainforest country. The remnant bushland up there is quite stunning. There's lots of freshwater water holes and waterfalls and all making its way down to the beautiful Tweed Byron coast, some of the best surf beaches on the east coast. So it is a very beautiful place to visit and a lovely place to live.
Where do you remember your passion for nature and the environment starting?
Yeah, look, I guess just having spent a lot of time on farms and in the bush with different family members and cousins and uncles and aunties, we're always either out picking fruit or picking vegetables on different farms, always down the beach. So that area just behind the dunes and into the tea tree scrub up home, some of the tea tree lakes around that part of the world is some of my earliest memories. You look at those tea tree lakes and you think the water's dirty, but it's quite clear. It's just a bit brackish from the tea tree and the paper bark. Yeah.
Nowadays, you do a lot of presenting with Gardening Australia and, of course, your time at the Royal Botanic Garden Sydney. How does it feel to share your knowledge of plants and your cultural knowledge of plants with other people?
I guess it's really interesting because I don't think there's anybody on the planet who has ever learnt anything, in solitude. We all take information from mentors and teachers and lecturers and parents and family, and it's a daily occurrence. If you think you know everything, then unfortunately you're sadly mistaken. So I've been pretty lucky to travel to lots of communities and just have lots of really good people around me, and the Royal Botanic Garden Sydney in particular, all of the horticulturalists, botanists, ethnobotanists, evolutionary ecologists, phytochemists, all the people who job titles I never knew existed, who are just so passionate about plants. That's one of the most beautiful things about working with people in that space, is that you all bond over your love of nature. So it's just a beautiful thing, and been blessed to be able to share what is now my knowledge, but is knowledge that's been passed on to me from so many different people.
Yeah, you're like a vessel for the information.
That's all we can be, because at some point the vessel is going to get cast adrift and we're back out into the ether.
I did a little bit of research into some of all of the amazing things you've been involved with, from performing to your work on television. How does it feel to have gotten to express your culture and develop your understanding of culture through so many different mediums? Is that something you had always hoped to do, or have you strived to find those opportunities, or did they find you?
Oh, that's a good question, actually. Yeah. When I was younger, you know, I think everybody has different aspirations when they're younger. You know, I was sort of I was good at sport. You know, I thought maybe that was going to be my vehicle to get ahead and to make a mark in the world. And then lots of cousins in particular who were really good musos, and you know, we're all playing guitar and having fun with music. And then you go from being a sports star and wanting to be a rock star, and then you know, you want to be rich and famous, and then as you get older, you think, look, I don't really need the fame, I'll just take the fortune, thanks. So it's a little bit different, I guess, for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people, in that you know we're a small percentage of the population, but we are overrepresented in different fields of endeavour, quite well in sport, obviously, but also in the arts. Sadly, you know, on the flip side of that, we're also overrepresented in incarceration and in so many other things where we're not doing so well. So it's I think for a lot of us, we feel a responsibility to try and be as positive and push our combined cultures forward as much as we can. And that's, you know, for me, it's been really just a journey that's made I kind of end up doing things that I like doing, as opposed to things that are going to, you know, make me rich or make me well known. I think if you pursue something too hard and try too hard in a particular space, you might end up with a bit of trouble. Whereas, you know, if you just let it flow and just be true to yourself, I think it'll all come together in the end.
That's wonderful advice. What is it about Australian plants in particular that really grabs your attention?
I think it's, you know, partly because of the evolution and the fact that a lot of them have been around since Pangaea, Gondwana. You know, sort of they've certainly done their thing, and they've adapted to some unbelievable climates and some unbelievable changes in the environment that they live in. You know, we are blessed to be in a beautiful continent. You know, we've got, you know, if you go far north, you've got the Daintree, you've got, you know, the Great Barrier Reef, you go in, you've got the desert, you know, we've got Uluru, we've got all of these amazing, you know, iconic geographical forms. And you know, then we go down to the Snowy Mountains, you know, so anything from snow to desert to, you know, the beautiful island of Tasmania, there's all these amazing areas where you just cannot help but be amazed at what you find. Like, you know, I remember being in Tassie and seeing, you know, 1,000-year-old King Billy pines, and just thinking, man, these are incredible specimens. But just the fact that what they've seen, how long they've been there, the changes what's happened in their 1,000 years on the planet, but then, you know, the plants around them, and then there's remnant rainforest down in Tassie, and then you go into, you know, the central desert, and you look at plants that are able to survive in the harshest conditions, and you think, man, they just do so well. And then, you know, on top of that, the Aboriginal people who have been able to manage these spaces and to be able to utilize these plants in ways that have just been so unbelievable that you can't help but be amazed by it.
I couldn't agree more. Let's say hypothetically you've been, I don't know, stuck at work and in the city a lot, and you just really need to have a moment to reconnect to the outdoors, I guess. how do you reconnect with country when you're feeling a bit distant?
Look, I think we are spoiled, and a lot of people maybe they don't appreciate it, maybe they just don't have the time to appreciate it. It seems that it takes a lockdown for people to actually take stock of what we actually have around us. Like, we're surrounded by the Blue Mountains and Gringo National Park, and then you go up, there's Barrington Tops, and then you've got the Royal National Park to the south. There's just these amazing spaces that we have so close to the largest city in the country. And that's the thing. Like, a lot of us live in Sydney because it's just a place to where we can forge a career, or we can obtain work, and we can care for our families. But for me as an Aboriginal person living in the city, I really need that connection. And it's so easy to do. One of the first trips I ever did when I moved to Sydney many, many years ago was to jump on a train from Redfern out to Cronulla, and then get on the ferry and go over to Bundina, and then hike the coast track down and camp overnight, and then the next day hike through to Otford, get on the train, and then you're back in Sydney. Like, it's so easy to do, and you just feel so energized from your day to day that just keeps you in that grind.
The theme for NAIDOC Week this year is Heal Country, and I was really interested to ask, what does that mean to you personally?
I've been thinking about it as soon as they announced the theme. Without wanting to sound like a cranky old bugger, I think back to when I was a kid, and my parents and all of my extended family, like, we never ever thought that thought to disrespect the earth in any way, shape, or form. Even though many of my family members, my dad in particular, he was a farmer and a fisherman, it was always about balance and sustainability before sustainability even became a thing. Mm-hmm. And if we were on the beach, or if we were in the bush, it was always, never leave your rubbish behind. Don't break things. Don't take things without asking, and that goes to, the plants and the animals in the bush. All of those things were just a given for me as a kid. Mm. Now that I'm older, I just see the way that people, just on an individual level, there's no care factor, and you just have to go to the beach and just see all the crap people leave behind. Like, where do they think mm-hmm. that stuff goes? It's mm-hmm. like, if you take it with you, surely it's easy enough to take it back out again. It's mind-boggling, to be honest. And that's just on a personal level. If if it expands out, we take that individual level. One person leaves one bit of rubbish. That's 20 pieces of rubbish that get left behind on a daily basis. So, 20 million pieces of rubbish multiplied by 365 days of the year, you wonder why we've got so much trash everywhere. It's just crazy. It makes no sense to me. But, as I say, I might be just a cranky old bugger now.
I agree, though. And I think it's evident, like, we're seeing, whether or not people who maybe don't have an inherent connection to the land, like, even just statistically, like, we know that climate change is a problem, pollution is a problem. It distresses me. I imagine it's quite distressing.
It is, and that's the thing. Like, we have, over 500 different language groups in Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander cultures, and each of us have a connection to our particular country, but we're all connected broadly through song lines and through our Aboriginal connections anyway. So, We feel it possibly more than others. I don't know, but it's not to say that non-Aboriginal people can't have a connection to country. There's a lot of farmers out there in particular who have a very strong connection to country, and they're changing their ways. They're seeing what needs to be done, as you say, with climate change and with drought. We've had literally a run where it was drought followed by intense bushfires, followed by, you know, global pandemic, followed by floods, back into pandemic. So, you know, these things don't happen in isolation. We are all connected and we all need to do better to, you know, heal country. If we look after country, country will look after us.
Well said. At the moment in your work, what is inspiring you?
What's inspiring me is the team I've got around me at the moment. You know, a lot of young Aboriginal people, non-Aboriginal collaborators who are working. We're all on the same page when it comes to, you know, design and green space. You know, but we can't get away from the fact that we are encroaching more and more on bushland. As development increases, as the population increases, we have to come up with smarter ways to be able to do that. And, you know, when we look at global cities in particular, you know, well, I'm doing a lot of work in the greater Sydney region, but, you know, we're trying, along with many of our collaborators, to work smarter, but also come up with designs that can really enhance, you know, and try to negate in some ways what's happening with that cutting up of remnant bushland or whatever's being taken out to make way for housing or to make way for infrastructure. So, you know, if we can move forward without, you know, making too great of an impact, then, you know, hopefully it'll make for a better world. But, you know, it's a tricky one because as the population grows, everyone needs somewhere to live. Everybody needs to have a job. But, you know, by the same token, we also need to eat. So, you know, our food bowl needs to be looked after. All of our, essential services, our healthcare, or our old people, everyone needs to be looked after. So, how do we do that with, leaving as small of a footprint, but also as a much smaller impact on Mother Nature? Because, you know, in the end, it's about how we live with the earth as opposed to, you know, just taking advantage of it.
And I thought you got to have hope. I have hope that is something that is improving. Where do you see traditional knowledge and First Nations knowledge being a huge asset to solving some of those huge problems?
First and foremost, I'd like to see it start to come into play with fire management. You know, we should not have ever had such hot bushfires. And peak summer when we're having these fires. I've recently down the south coast looking at the regeneration, and those fires burnt so hot that it's quite scary. Is what's coming back, and, you know, if it will ever be the same. So, you know, if we really want to think about caring for country and healing country, step one is, you know, how do we mitigate the risk of this happening again? How do we mitigate the risk of not having enough water for our wetlands, for our river systems, for, you know, all of the resources, the natural resources that we need to survive as a species? You know, we are not the dominant species. We think we are, but we are just a part of the ecosystem. We really need to get our headspace around that and think as, you know, a part of the system as opposed to the boss of the system. We're not the boss.
You got to let everything be in balance.
Exactly.
If you were going to share, I mean, you share so much of your knowledge and your passion with other people, but I guess for listeners of the podcast, if you could, I guess, share one last thing of a motivation to reflect on the land around them with something maybe you particularly love, whether it be a memory or a place that you particularly love, what would you like to share?
It's hard for me to go past the ocean as a saltwater fellow and, everything that brings about. But as I said, we're spoiled if we're on the East Coast or, it doesn't matter where you are, but here on the East Coast in particular, you know, we can literally, you know, go to a freshwater water hole and follow that, you know, fresh water down to the ocean. It's just so easy to do to connect with nature and to try to understand those systems a little bit better and, you know, maybe take time to reflect and just meditate on what it means, and you know, maybe try and put yourself back 500 years and think what it must have been like, and you know, think what can we do to minimize our impact as we move forward. I think, you know, there's ways for people to get out there into the bush and really you know, connect, and you know, they can do that through mindfulness or just, you know, just through just taking the time to just enjoy the serenity of it all. You know, they're the things that I find, you know, help me in my day-to-day life. And, you know, things are only getting faster from what I can see. So, you know, if we have that time to pause and to get out into the bush or to get onto the, you know, down onto the coast and see, you know, how some of these plants interact and, you know, what sort of pollinators are coming in and what birds are, you know, coming in and what, are there any lizards and snakes around and all those sort of things. Don't be fearful of the bush. Try and understand it a little bit better and try to connect to it and look at ways that you can, you know, do your little bit, you know, join a bush care group, go out and help pull weeds, do whatever you can to make this country, you know, a beautiful, beautiful space that it has always been. But, you know, we don't want it to, you know, slowly slip away from us. So I think, you know, anything that we can do to connect, you know, it's going to be great for all of us and, you know, even better for, you know, healing country.
What a beautiful last sentiment. Thank you so much, Clarence.
No problem, Rose. Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to Branch Out. If you'd like more information about NAIDOC Week, head to the NAIDOC Week website. And then over on the Royal Botanic Garden Sydney's website, we have some virtual backgrounds of native plants that you can use on things like Zoom. I know most of you are in lockdown like myself. And we also have a Bush Tucker Garden ebook that you can download and have a look at how to spruce up your garden. Branch Out was produced and presented by me, Rose Kerr. If you like the podcast, please subscribe, leave us a review, or even better, send it to a friend. Next time on Branch Out, we'll be looking at extreme plants and the adaptations they have to thrive in these extreme environments.